Dear Governor is a production of iHeartMedia and Three Mutts Media.
Jarvis Masters, it is the judgment and sentence of this court that the charged information was true.
There are innocent people on death row.
It is the order of this court that you suffer death.
Innocent people change minds. It has, in every state, you will probably see that change the death penalty is because they found too many innocent people on death row.
Said penalty to be inflicted within the walls of San Quentin.
They said that I sharpened the weapon and sent it down to the guy who then made it into a pole and speared the guard.
At which point, you shall be put to death.
The reason why I ended up getting death row is because I didn't try to defend myself.
You are remanded to the custody of the warden of San Quentin.
Beyond the racial part, who gets death and who doesn't is, as was called by the Supreme Court back in the 70s, a strike of lightning.
I thought that these guys are in trouble, not me.
There was so much evidence that was kept from us that if he were tried now, you know, they'd get an acquittal.
I wish they would have found that weapon, because that weapon would have been my way out of here. I really believe if they found that weapon, I would not have been charged for murder.
He should not be on death row. He shouldn't be in prison, actually, for this crime. It's really a tragedy. It's really unfair.
No one knows how long a day is. I'm fucking with someone that doesn't know what a day feels like, innocent on death row. They have no idea.
May God have mercy on your soul.
May God have mercy on your soul.
Imagine through a series of random coincidences and professional ties, you're introduced to a renowned author who is as respected as he is beloved. His award-winning essays have garnered international acclaim as they speak to the heart of the human condition, love and devotion. His books are recommended reading in many high schools across the country, the students of which consider him to be their mentor. This is a man of deep faith and conviction who decades ago took the Buddhist vow to do no harm one step further. He vowed to do everything in his power to alleviate the suffering of others. All of this despite the fact that he was a victim of a deeply flawed foster care system. Growing up in Long Beach, California ghettos in the 60s and 70s, the abuse he endured at the hands of multiple foster parents is all but unspeakable. Born to a heroin-addicted mother and a brutally violent father, it's difficult to fathom how any human would have the strength to overcome the kind of generational abuse that destroys lives, families, and entire communities. Others have been broken by a fraction of the horrors perpetrated on this man, but he has somehow managed to find joy, hope, and even optimism through it all. Now, imagine this paragon of compassion, who has been lauded by luminaries from Archbishop Desmond Tutu to Buddhist teacher Pema Chodron, and for whom theater troupes have written stage plays, and realize that he has been languishing on San Quentin's death row for over 30 years. His name is Jarvis J. Masters, and it was by way of professional happenstance that our paths crossed. My name is Corny Cole. I'm a television and radio producer. By lottery of birth, I grew up not 20 miles from Jarvis, in a Tony all-white Republican enclave that is North Tustin. My parents picked this town because the neighborhood was safe and the public schools were some of the best in the state. Prior to meeting Jarvis, I hadn't had much occasion to think about the death penalty. Why would I? I never knew anyone who was in prison, much less a condemned prisoner. I, like my father and his father before him, believed the death penalty was a fair, effective, cost-efficient way to rid society of the dregs of humanity. I never examined this conviction. I never had reason to. In getting to know Jarvis, reading his extensive body of work, talking for endless hours on the phone, I have been forced to look within and question what I held to be true for so long. On this podcast, myself, along with a community of his supporters, want to introduce you and the governor of California to the man who is Jarvis Masters. For one, we believe you will be a better person for knowing him. And for two, as we close in on the 2020 presidential elections, hopefully his story can be an impetus for some to explore their own surface-level convictions and dig deeper to understand why they believe what they believe, and in turn make their vote all that much more vital. While everyone seems to agree that the criminal justice system is in dire need of reform, capital punishment is the ultimate wedge issue. controversial and polarizing. It's about politics, it's about morality, and it splits our electorate almost down the middle. Despite the fact that U.S. opposition to the death penalty is at its highest in decades, President Trump doubled down on his pro-death penalty advocacy by expanding the practice.
AG Bill Barr now announcing the federal government will resume capital punishment. First time since 2003, Barr directing prison officials to schedule the executions of five death row inmates.
There will be a strict timetable for judicial proceedings that will allow the imposition of the death sentence without undue delay.
In response to this edict, a group of 175 family members of people murdered wrote a letter to AG Barr imploring him to change his mind. They wrote that the death penalty exacerbates the trauma of losing a loved one and creates yet another grieving family. It also wastes many millions of dollars that could be better invested in programs that actually reduce crime and violence and that address the needs of families like ours. Also in response to Barr's pronouncement, Joe Biden, a longtime supporter of the death penalty, tweeted, "Because we can't ensure that we get these cases right every time, we must eliminate the death penalty." President Trump's DOJ has not only reinstated the death penalty, but if he has his way, drug dealers will be put to death right alongside murderers.
In China, they have a very, very tough penalty for drugs. It's called the death penalty. And I said to President Xi, "So you have 1.4 billion people and you don't have a drug problem." I said, "What do you attribute that to?" "Death penalty. Quick trial."
Following this zealous defense of capital punishment, Massachusetts Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley unveiled House Resolution 4052, also known as the People's Justice Guarantee. It would, quote, "prohibit the imposition of the death penalty for any violation of federal law and for other purposes." Of the approximately 30 co-sponsors, Michigan Representative Justin Amash is the only non-Democrat who signed on. From an ABC News interview, Sister Helen Prejean, author of Dead Man Walking and an outspoken opponent of the death penalty.
This is the first presidential campaign where you have, well, most, if not all, of the Democratic candidates calling for an end to the death penalty. We've never had a presidential candidate before, even Obama. There's a huge shift happening in the country about the death penalty.
It was only as recent as 2016 that the Democrats formally opposed the death penalty in its party platform. But if politics isn't the arbiter of what's important at this moment in time, look no further than Hollywood and popular culture. Kim Kardashian has become an outspoken advocate for the condemned after realizing just how broken the system is. And earlier this year, the film Just Mercy, starring Michael B. Jordan and Jamie Foxx, was released. It follows the true story of attorney Brian Stevenson, who made it his life's mission to fight for the wrongfully condemned.
You only know what you're into down here in Alabama when you're guilty from the moment you're born.
Earlier in the year, movie director Edward Zwick released Trial by Fire, starring Laura Dern. It tells the true story of Cameron Todd Willingham, who was executed in Texas for allegedly killing his three daughters after scientific evidence and expert testimony that bolstered his claims of innocence were suppressed.
You are guilty of capital murder by order of the state of Texas. You are sentenced to death.
Oprah Winfrey's recent book club pick was Anthony Ray Hinton's memoir, The Sun Does Shine, How I Found Life and Freedom on Death Row, after a case of mistaken identity sent him there. On March 13th of this year, Governor Gavin Newsom held a press conference in which he announced that death penalty executions in California would be halted under his administration and during his time in office.
There was a National Academy of Science report that came out that estimates one out of every 25 people on death row is innocent. If that's the case, that means if we move forward with executing 737 people in California, we will have executed roughly 30 people that are innocent.
In that same presser, Governor Newsom made a call to our better angels because he said, when you know better, you do better.
There are innocent people on death row. I cannot sign off on executing hundreds and hundreds of human beings, knowing that among them will be innocent human beings.
My name is Jarvis Masters. I have been an inmate at San Quentin Institute for almost 30 years.
40 years.
Oh, shit. That's a long time, isn't it? So sometimes you just want to let that stuff go, right? I mean, you want to keep it low. You know, you want to, like, you know, you don't want to, you know what it is. You just say something different all the time. I have been an inmate at San Quentin Prison for almost 40 years. I am certainly guilty of the crimes that brought me here. And I own the mistakes I made, and I've paid my dues. But I'm not guilty of the crime that put me here on death row for the last 30 years. I hope you take time to listen to my story. And I hope you have the heart to recognize the unjust reality of capital punishment. How many guilty men have to be put to death to justify the execution of one innocent man?
Dear Governor Newsom.
Dear Mr. Governor Newsom.
This is an open letter to Governor Gavin Newsom. Dear Governor Newsom.
Myself, along with a group of your constituents, wants to introduce you to an exceptional human being, one of the 737 souls currently on California's death row.
I supposed to have lost my damn mind by now, but I think I'm a survivor, something or someone who survived so long, long, long. I think that I'm lucky.
Our group spans the political spectrum. Some are pro-death penalty, while others are outspoken advocates for the abolition of the death penalty.
The California State Prison, San Quentin, California.
Jarvis, you're lucky. You know, I don't like to say that because I'm in a place where, you know, how in the hell can you be lucky on death row living in a 954 cell for 40 years? How do you make sense out of that, you know?
This is the story of one man, but this is not one man's story.
I am so lucky that I have my sanity. I have people to motivate me, to keep me going. That's how I know that, you know, I'm in a good place. I mean, inside, internally, I'm in a really, really good place.
A man who found grace in an unjust system. A system so broken that justice is not colorblind nor free from social bias.
So many things in my life I'm thankful for, you know, and I think what happens to me, Courtney, is that when you learn how to start thanking people for the person you've made yourself to be, or you're just full of, you humble yourself in front of people who, you know, that is doing things for you in ways where you can't help but feel thankful, you know, because you come from a place where these things never happen, and to see them happening, it's like, you know, it's one of those wows, you know, so. Yeah, I think about a lot of people who's helped me along the way.
Soon after the pandemic brought our world to a screeching halt, Jarvis reached out to me to share how dramatically things have changed for him and his buddies on the East Block. San Quentin thus far has remained relatively infection-free when you compare it to other prisons from across the country. Because social distancing in jails and prisons is all but impossible, and sanitizer is forbidden, infection rates are exponentially higher than that of the general public. The New York Times aptly labeled jails as the petri dishes for the virus.
What's it like in there? Like, on the outside, it's been crazy out here. It feels completely dystopian. All sorts of shutdowns, and nobody's going to work, and everybody's staying at home, and the streets are empty. So what does it feel like on the inside?
From my vantage point, it's like all hell's being done out there. I mean, it's a real sci-fi movie. And if you look out there, you see people and their reactions to this disease, it is really, really scary, you know. And we all think about our families and friends and loved ones, and just like everyone else would.
What is the biggest worry?
What gets me is that anytime someone gets sick, instead of putting them in the hospital, they put them in solitary confinement, the whole. And for someone to say, I got a fever and I'm not feeling well, say they're going to put you there, I guess not too many people are going to raise their hand when they are sick. They're not going to do it. So there is no real serious motive to raise your hand when you're really, really sick. What are you going to do? You're going to say, okay, I'm sick, just send me to the hole where I can barely breathe and no one ever see me? No. I'm not going to be put in isolation confinement where I cannot use the phone. Well, I can't inform my family how I'm doing or find out what they're up to. That's a bad, bad plan that San Quentin has for this problem.
Is there any testing that's being done to them, or they just get sent down to the hole?
No, there's no test kits here. If you you got a temperature, and that temperature stayed at a high level for a couple of days, they're going to throw you in hole. There's guys coughing all around me. But because it's the flu season, you can't really determine what that cough actually means. I know that yesterday a guy went to the hole because he had a high fever. So that's how that goes. But other than that, everyone's watching TV, and everyone's watching the news, and everyone's listening to the radio. And everyone doesn't understand what Trump does. But this is the West Coast. This is California. But I think a lot of people don't see him as being in control of this. They see local governments being more in control of it. For me, I follow the money. The money would tell me how serious everything is out there. The stock market's crashed. There's a serious problem. When they're losing $8, $9, $10 trillion a day, that's a serious problem. Anything that generates money, if it's shut down, it tells me it is a serious problem. What gets me more than anything is when people say to me, Jarvis, you know, I understand what it feels like to be in prison now. And I say, really? I mean, I get that. I don't even want to burst their bubble, you know. I just let them feel that, you know. When I'm on the phone, a lot of people are very sympathetic to me being locked up based on their 3 weeks out of work and at home.
Yep.
With their spouse. That must be a lot. But if their mind is in that place of confinement, really, it is true that they feel locked up. They can't go outside for their walks, or when they can't do the things they normally would do, to suddenly cut that off is a real problem. I can sort of get it in one way. You know, I can get it because you cut off from the routine of life, and you will feel crummy. You have to. Even if you're getting paid for not working, you will still see a National Guard somewhere down the street asking you where you're going. That is really unusual. A guard tells me all the time, where are you going? And I have a quicker response than you. You, on the other hand, have a very hard time understanding this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you don't know where it's coming from. Life, property, jobs, employment, the way the world is suddenly getting turned upside down. And I understand that.
Up next, it's difficult enough for a healthy adult mind to bear witness to this tragedy. But imagine how much more terrifying it is for a death row inmate who suffers from mental illness or schizophrenia.
Another thing I want to talk about was, this is something I'm starting to observe just because I look for things to look at, psychiatry. There's a lot of people on death row or in prison, especially in San Quentin, who's taking psych meds for one reason or another, whether it's paranoia, whether it's anxiety. To have this thing going on right here, you're creating a whole new different kind of fear. That fear is being concentrated 5, 6, 8 times worse than it would be me and you. So you take a guy who has anxiety problems or schizophrenic, whatever it is, and you can really see the difference in him. You really can. I mean, this is very clear. And it can only get worse. Because I heard one guy, he's a good friend of mine, he says, I don't think I can take 3 more weeks of this. I cannot take 3 more weeks of this. And I'm thinking, where was he for the last 15 years? He's at the boiling point.
What'd you tell him?
I just told him, you need to wait. You don't know what 3 weeks might feel like. You may become a chess player. You don't know what you're going to be doing in 3 weeks. I told him also, but if you can't take it to the point where I think you can't take it, then you'll be going by your damn self, because I'm not going with you. And he thought that was really, really funny. And I was trying to let him know. But what got me, Corny, was this. When he said, I don't think I can take 3 more weeks of this. That told me a whole lot. It's almost like he's repeating what he's watching.
Yep.
And he takes it more serious than the people he's looking at.
Like he's feeling the anxiety of the world to an exponential amount.
Right. But the problem is, he's in a cell on death row, and there's already many reasons to feel hopeless. You can call somebody and try to figure out how can you homeschool your kids or whatever. Kids are straight up doomed. They're just doomed.
Boom, 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 boom. Banging, constant, probably consistent. Bang, bang, my mind, I'll lose it. Broken, pieces, sick, I'm bleeding. Silence kills me, noises scare me. Darkness likes me, I don't know me. Can you help me, hold me, heal me, save me, love me?
Dear Governor Newsom, my name is Samara Gayev. I'm founder and artistic director of Truthworker Theater Company. We're a social justice-based hip-hop theater company for young people who are directly impacted by mass incarceration, with loved ones who are currently or formerly incarcerated. And we create original, cutting-edge theater.
Kill me, you can never kill me.
Incorporating music and movement and dance and lyricism and testimony. Creating visions for change around the prison system and all of its ricocheting impacts on our communities.
Jarvis! Jarvis!
I'm out here, Mimi.
Why, there you are, Jarvis. I've been looking all over for you.
I first met Jarvis over 10 years ago after I had survived a violent crime at the hands of a young man who is now serving multiple lifetimes in prison. This was not an easy thing for me. Despite my survival and despite experiencing violence, I still understand that hurt people, and prison is not a solution to create healed communities that are accountable to one another. Jarvis was family and dear friend and mentor to one of my closest friends, and she put us in contact with one another, knowing that I was committed to really exploring healing and justice, and also that I work in New York City public schools, and particularly in transfer schools that are specifically geared towards servicing young people who are overaged and undercredited, which often means gang-affiliated, formerly incarcerated, pregnant and parenting, or impacted by foster care. Jarvis, spending his boyhood in and out of foster homes and being a ward of the state from such a young age, incarcerated while still a juvenile and unjustly sentenced to death, then serving 23 consecutive years in solitary confinement, was committed to mentorship. On his own path to liberation despite confinement, Jarvis had made clear to my friend that he wanted to be directly connected to other young people who were navigating systems that perpetuated oppression, marginalization, and were disproportionately targeting young Black and brown people.
God, am I forgiven for my sins?
I'm gonna die behind these walls, aren't I? I'm gonna be killed for something that I didn't do.
God, am I forgiven for my sins?
You have 60 seconds remaining.
Do you know how many people are on the outside fighting for you, love? You may not be able to climb those walls,
but I can make them disappear.
Almost 30 years into his death sentence, and Jarvis's habeas corpus oral arguments are finally on the docket. Next week, as he anxiously awaits those arguments before the California Supreme Court, Jarvis will share his perspective on this untenable waiting game, and I'll report back from the courthouse. This episode was written and produced by Donna Fazzari and myself, Corny Cole. Stu Sternbach composed the original music. Nate Dufort did the sound design. Special thanks to Samara Gayev and the cast and the crew at the Truthworker Theater Company, who provided us with clips and music from their original hip-hop musical, Boxed In and Blacked Out in America. Visit freejarvis.org to find out more about Jarvis's case and to sign your name to our Dear Governor Newsom petition. And if you have questions for Jarvis, please leave a message on our hotline at 201-903-3575. That's 201-903-3575. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.